Starting, Kabura from Israel Harris.
So I thought I'd be a bit brave and say a few words about Harama, which is kind of quite a colourful subject, I suppose, yeah? Touchy, colourful, trickery, you know. So basically, start off with just to put the context, yeah? The broader context is that we've got quite a number of different halachas here, yeah, that talk about what you do after shechting an animal. So, you know, just kind of, there's a bit of a reality here that when you shecht an animal, obviously, you've got all sorts of things from that animal that are quite valuable financially, yeah? So you're shechting the animal because you want to have a nice yontif meal, yeah? But then you have to think about, you know, all the different pieces of meat. You might, you know, you're not necessarily going to eat all of them. You've got the halavim, you've got the fats that are also maybe valuable. You can process them and do things after yontif. As we know, you've got the skins. So we've got all these different gemaras, mishnas and gemaras that are talking about the kinds of things you can do in order to deal with this kind of situation where you're only going to have a bit of meat, but you don't want to let everything else go to ruin. So when it comes to the meat, yeah, we bring two types of things that you can do in order to allow you to put some salt onto the meat. And obviously, again, the reason why you want to do that is because if you're going to eat only some of the meat and the rest of it is not even salted, then it's going to go off. And that's a very big financial loss. So what are the two suggestions? So the first one is Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Shmuel, that says that what you can do is you can kind of, you know, if it's possible, I guess, that if you've got all the meat here, and even though you're going to eat only some of it, right, you can just take a whole load of salt and kind of in one foul swoop kind of go and salt all of those pieces of meat. So that's one suggestion. And then the second is what actually Rav Adabar himself did, which is Malach Garma Garma. So he went and kind of did this, what we talk about, this harama, this is kind of some degree of trickery, whereby he took each piece and said, well, you know, I'm going to eat this, so to speak, and salt the piece, yeah? And then kind of said, oh, no, and put it down, and then went and took each piece one by one, yeah? And by doing that, he went through all the different pieces. So obviously what we're going to try to look at is what is the kind of basis of that heter of doing harama, and are there kind of any limitations to it? So in order to explore this a bit, I think we need to contrast maybe with some other cases of harama, other interesting cases of harama. So in the Gemara on Shabbos, there's a couple of other interesting cases that are brought there. So it talks about this kind of young Talmud scholar, yeah, a scholar who went, and he had a barrel of wine, and the barrel of wine had a spout, and it was kind of started to be leaky, yeah? So what did he do, yeah? He went and he took a whole load of cloves of garlic and stuffed it into the hole, yeah? Therefore, kind of plugging up the hole, right? So that is some form of kind of tikkun, yeah? But he said, oh, you know, all I'm doing is, you know, I just need a place for my pieces of garlic, you know? So happened to be very convenient that it ended up plugging up the hole. So that was one case. And then the second case, which I was kind of like, is that there's a, you know, again, the same kind of Talmudic scholar, let's call him. So, you know, he wanted to get over to the other side of the river, it's kind of clear. And so what does he do? So he goes and he has a schluff on a ferry boat. Yeah, he lies down, yeah, and starts to, you know, lay himself out. And, oh, hey, presto, the non-Jew comes, the non-Jewish operator of the ferry boat comes and moves it across the other side. He suddenly kind of wakes up and, you know, and then, oh, he's managed to cross over to the other side. So both those cases, obviously, the Gemara explains the cases of harama, yeah? And it's important to stress, though, that all the cases of harama we're talking about are where the actual prohibitions involved are going to be derabanons. And there's also, you know, we'll see there's different types of derabanons also in terms of, you know, kind of severity and concerns and things like that. So that's also a factor. But the Gemara over there basically explains, yeah, that since it's a derabanon, that's important, but also since it's surban and a derabanon, yeah, which since we're talking about someone who's a Talmud scholar, right? So basically that kind of harama in those kind of situations for a Talmudic scholar is going to be permitted, yeah? And Rashi kind of there tries to explain why we're talking about this kind of scholar is allowed to do this kind of thing. And Rashi interestingly says, because at the end of the day, the scholar, the way he's going to do the harama is going to be done in quite a way which is open way, in a sense, that he's going to do and explain round. He knows what he's doing, and he's going to explain round to everyone, you know, what his intentions are, yeah, so that people understand that he's not just kind of taking liberties. So he will, you know, make sure, you know, that everyone knows that, you know, I'm storing my garlic, and, you know, he's going to do that, or he's going to say, right, exactly, and he's not going to do it in huge public. He's going to make sure that, you know, there's not too many people around, and whoever's around, he say, oh, I'm really tired, I'm just going to have a schluff, you know. And so that way, things are not going to get out of hand, basically. That's the kind of the way that Rashi, according to the Taz, explains it. So, okay, so those are the cases in Shabbos. But what about our case, yeah? So there'd be room to say, maybe the harama that we're talking about, it was done by Rav Ada Ba'ava. It was an actual case of what he did. So maybe you'd say, okay, maybe it's the same thing. Yeah? It's a more limited kind of principle where just because he's going to go around and explain to everyone, and therefore there's not going to be so much fallout, etc. But actually, the Mefarshim, although some Rishonim, a few Rishonim say that's the case, that it was because he was a Tzorba de Rabbanan, most of the Rishonim say not. They say actually that this is a heter that is available to everyone. In fact, the Shita Mekubetzet points out that our Gemara doesn't say anything about Tzorba de Rabbanan. So it's mashma that although it was Rav Ada Ba'ava who did it, it's mashma that this is something that anyone can do. Yeah, and the Rosh in Shabbos brings this case, and he basically explains that in Hafnami there's different types of situations, and sometimes we don't permit harama at all. Sometimes we permit it, but only for someone who's a Tzorba de Rabbanan, and sometimes it's completely permitted to everyone. And basically, you know, you have to judge each case by its merits, so to speak. Okay, so the next contrast is going to be a Gemara that we're going to see later on Yud Zayin. And that Gemara is talking about cooking from Yontif to Shabbos. So obviously, ideally, you have an Eruv to have Shilin and everything is fine, yeah? But what's the situation where, unfortunately, you haven't got your Eruv to have Shilin, or let's say you've eaten it or whatever, it's no longer around,
you
yeah?
Really sad until
your towel
comes off.
Somebody looks
so sad.
Ah, yeah, that's what we're dealing with. But the Gemara there obviously deals with the fact that maybe some people are not going to be able to just sit and be sad, and so they're going to start to do other things. So the mutter way to do things is what it says is, well, you know what you can do if you actually, you know, you can cook something for Yontif, just one dish that you're really going to eat, yeah. And if there's leftovers, then okay, that's fine. But you're cooking with just one dish that you're genuinely going to eat. That's okay, yeah? However, what it says is you're not allowed to do is a harama. You're not allowed, let's say, after you've eaten, to go and say, I think I'm now going to have just a little bit of this, and then you cook this, and then you're like, I don't want that. Maybe I'll have a bit of this, and then you cook that, and you're not allowed to do that. And in fact, it says it's very serious, yeah? That if you try to do harama, then bidyeved, you're not going to be able to have it at all. It's going to be more serious than if you were to do it bemazed, yeah? So what...
In the kit, you are allowed to do marin, though, you could add extra little portions, right?
Right, so that's not considered, though, harama. Because that's what's called, that's the different principle of called marbe bishurim, yeah?
Right.
Yeah? Right. Which is where you're genuinely going to eat a certain amount, yeah? And, you know, you're going to have a chulin, so, okay, it comes all in one pot, and, you know there's more than you're going to eat, but there's various reasons why marbe bishurim is mutter. That's not necessarily considered a rum. But if really, you know, you're just going to decide, well, you know, I'm going to say I'm going to eat this dish, and, you know, that is certainly not allowed. So obviously, all the Rishonim, yeah, ask, well, what's the difference between that case of harama, which is not allowed, yeah, and our case, which is allowed, yeah? Because again, it's a bit of a joke here. He's picking up a piece of meat, kind of knowing inside that he's not really going to eat this, and yet he's sorting it, yeah. So there's effectively three approaches to explain, yeah, three reasons to explain the differences, yeah. The first reason is to point out again what kind of rabbinic dins are we talking about. So over there, it's Bishul, which is Durabanan. We spoke about this in one of the other Chaburas, yeah? That cooking from Yontif to Shabbos is potentially Durabanan. Right, it needs to be a Durabanan, because otherwise Erev Tavshim wouldn't be permitted, yeah? So let's take on it is Durabanan, but it's kind of a pretty serious Durabanan of Bishul, yeah? It's kind of close, quite close to a kind of a derisa kind of Issa. Whereas here, right, we're talking about Ibud of Oakley, yeah. When you're sorting things, the essential problem is really that it looks a bit similar, yeah, to where you're sorting skins and other things and processing. But in reality, it's not very similar, yeah. Actually, Rashi seems to say almost that it's not a malacha at all, if you look at Rashi on Yud Zayin. But even if it is a malacha, that is a rabbinic malacha, and it's kind of a chashash kind of thing that you may come on to other things. Yeah, so that malacha itself is not, there's not so much of a problem. Yeah, with sorting food, so it is prohibited, but not such a serious prohibition.
Drawing blood is only on the live animal.
Yeah, I mean, if you're if you're taking out, you know, putting salt on and that takes out the blood, yeah, I don't think that's not a.
It's only the lava.
Yeah, well, I mean, you are taking out the blood on here, but it's not a malacha to salt the things. And on the other side of the spectrum, yeah, you've got a serious need to do this, yeah. There's simchas yontif, because as we said, yeah, if you're going to shecht an animal and you've got no way, and all the meat's going to have to go off, yeah, no one's going to, in their right mind, would do that. It's a huge financial loss, yeah. So the only way in which, you know, you're going to be able to shecht is if we allow something in order to get around this problem. So Tosfos says, which is not necessarily the case there on Shabbos yontif. There's plenty of other ways of dealing with the issue, yeah. So basically, because it's let's call it a lighter derabanan, and because of the simchas yontif, that's one derech. Yeah. Another explanation which is brought in the Meiri, yeah, is to say that basically there's a difference in the cases, because there we're talking about you've already eaten and you're suddenly pretending that you're going to cook something for another meal. Yeah, that is kind of like, it really looks dodgy. Yeah, you're coming after lunch and suddenly, you know, seeing person starting to cook around, people are going to be like, you know, this really doesn't look right. Whereas,
so we're in the sourcing of the meat now.
No, sorry. In that case over there, where you're cooking on yontif for Shabbos, yeah, we're talking about after a case where you already had your yontif meal and you're suddenly, you know, someone is suddenly pretending to that he's going to be cooking more for another meal on yontif or something like that. It just looks very dodgy, yeah. Whereas our case, says the Meiri, is before you've eaten, yeah, you know, and that's what, you know, you're actually genuinely going to be having your yontif meal, and you're in the morning, and you're picking up each piece, and, you know, it doesn't look so bad. It could well be that each piece you are genuinely maybe going to be taken. Now, it is harama, but all I'm saying is, from the appearance purposes, it looks much more genuine, and so therefore...
To be fair,
you're right, it is a kimba, but if you look at each case, it kind of looks a bit like that, because the case over there is talking about, yeah, the fact that you've already eaten, yeah. If you look, it talks about you've eaten your area of tavshilin and now, you know, there's nothing to do. So it does look as if it's, whereas here, I mean, it sounds as if, you know, you're in the process of eating. But you're right, it is a...
What about, if, you know, as in, you could say in our case, it's just, you know, there's a big presumption in our case, it's just yontif. I mean, what would happen if it was yontif into Shabbos? Is this just a yontif ba'al in the case of Garmi, or is it yontif into Shabbos as well? You know, if you're in a rush, cooking meat.
Well, our case, we wouldn't need to be going into Shabbos in a sense, because it doesn't matter even if the next day is chol. Because you are definitely, you know, you're definitely doing things in order to help preserve the meat. It's just that what you're doing is just a sorting of food, so it's kind of not so much of a problem in the first place anyway. You're right, it is an akimta, and we'll see at the end, in fact, that's something that might come down in halacha, these kind of akimtas. So it's important to recognize it as you're doing it. There's a certain akimta, chiddush in that. And then the last point the Ram points out is, over there also, you've been very negligent, yeah? Because, you know, at the end of the day, everyone knows, you know, Shabbos Yontif, make sure you've got an Erev Tavshilin, yeah? So the fact that you've gone and not had an Erev Tavshilin, you know, we're not necessarily going to allow you to take liberties with this harama. So there's various distinctions, yeah, that can be made, yeah? But if you take a step back, right, what really then comes out from this, yeah, is that where harama is allowed, but only in very limited ways. You know, either... The kind of facts that we're talking about is there has to be a serious need for it, yeah, like simchas yontif kind of need, yeah. It has to be, you know, that the malach we're talking about is not a serious derabanan, yeah. Or it has to be that where you're doing it looks kind of pretty genuine, yeah. So things are not basically going to get out of hand. People are not going to look, yeah, and start to get wrong impressions, and, you know, and that leads to sort of a bit of a rabbanon, because we said in those cases the reason why we're more comfortable is because the person who does the haram will make sure it's done in a way that it's not going to get out of hand. People are not going to start treating things lightly and then one thing leading to another. And therefore in halacha, that's the last point, that some of these things that we're talking about actually comes out in halacha. So for instance, yeah, we talked about simchas yontif. One nafka mina would be, if we're talking about simchas yontif, it would be that you have to be shechting the animal on yontif itself. Remember when we talked about Simchas Yom Tov before, that was very important, yeah? So if you've shechted the animal before Yom Tov, and you could have done this all before Yom Tov, then you're not going to have a Teirim of Simchas Yom Tov. And the Bach says that here. He says that although you can do this Harama, it has to be that you've shechted the animal on Yom Tov.
Why isn't this particular sorting garmi this mean you're going to have a financial loss? And it's like it's maybe, for example, less of a derabbanan than in, for example, where we see the Doris in place, or those things that we commit the end to the beginning, right?
Right.
Why would that not be?
Well, the Doris, in case you're right, is a more stringency, because when you think about it, you're sorting the skins, which is more akin to the Doris of Ibud. It's very much closer to actually a derisa. Sorting food is never really going to come to a derisa. It's just kind of more. It's more distant.
So all of those are derisa bases.
Yeah, the sorting of the skins we're much more stringent on. Yeah, that's why. Fats as well.
The fats we pushed off in the Umbro, what we were saying.
Yeah, but there's two categories though. The sorting food.
Everything else.
I'm talking about saving the hide.
Right. So you're right. We only permitted those with lots of different factors combined together. Like Simchas Yom Tov was one, and also was the fact that you could. It's not muchach milsa because you're.
It looks like.
So a lot of these factors are right. Actually, they appear in different contexts in other situations. So anyway, the nafkamina is one is that it may be that this only applies if you've shecht on Yom Tov. The other nafkamina being the Ramah himself says that maybe it only applies if you haven't yet eaten. Which is something we talked about before. That's brought in the Ramah in terms of halacha.
Very good.